Hey, welcome to Blue Jay Banner, sponsored by Equitable Bank. We take banking personally, West Pacific Dental Group, and Infusion Brewery. And make sure, thanks for joining us on YouTube, and make sure you're hitting the like and subscribe buttons. We hit kind of a milestone here about a week ago, so thank you so much for that. Really appreciate it as we grow our business and grow the word to all Blue Jay fans. We got a jam-packed show today, as you would expect before. You know, I know we say this every week, Ross, but the biggest game of the year. We've been saying that now.
We've been saying that for a few weeks now, but this really is the biggest game we've had all year.
Yeah, it's win or out for Creighton. I mean, either they win and have a great chance at winning the conference title, or lose and no chance of winning the regular season conference title, basically. But certainly a chance, to improve their position in the standings and so forth. But as we mentioned, we're sponsored by Equitable Bank. We take banking personally. See, Doug Nodgaard was off today, very busy on Twitter, president of Equitable Bank, firing off stuff at Nebraska fans. So good for Doug. And then West Pacific Dental Group and Infusion Brewery. Our guest today, we're going to have Jim Flannery, head basketball coach at Creighton, on in a while. But right now, we're going to shift over. It's baseball season already. And the head baseball coach at Creighton University, Mr. Ed Service, joins us. Hi, coach.
Hold on, Tim. We'll get Ed for you in just one moment. I just logged in.
All right. Oh, okay. No worries. The baseball team, an outstanding weekend. 2-1. Only their starters, two of their starters, three starters did not give up a run, an earned run during the weekend. Fabulous performance by the staff. Yeah. Yeah. And the one game they lost was 1-0 on an unearned run. So, man, it could have been a sweep against McNeese State, who's was predicted to win their conference. So, an exciting start. There's Coach.
Hey, guys.
Hey, man, how are we doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Well, you should be doing great, man. What a weekend.
Yeah, you know, we had an interesting travel day on Thursday. You know, we were supposed to leave at 6 in the morning. So the players are at the facility about 3. We get delayed till 10. We get delayed till 2. We get delayed till 3. We're on the plane for an hour and a half before it takes off. So we didn't get a chance to practice down there on Thursday, which we desperately wanted to do. But I give the guys credit. You know, they dealt with it. It's not like we played poorly on Friday. They just pitched a little bit better, maybe one or two pitches better than we did. And then we did a better job of bouncing back on Saturday, Sunday. So anytime you win 2 out of 3 on the road at this time of year, that's a good thing.
Well, not only that, to lose the third game 1-0. I mean, that was, it could have gone either way. You had chances right off the get-go, right?
Yeah, we did. And real pleased with how the Ryan Windham and Justin Kleinsorge did. You know, to go 6 innings at this time of year is very unusual. But, you know, McNeese State was very aggressive. They swing at a lot of first pitches, and we were able to keep the pitch count down, so we were able to get those pitchers deep into the game.
Bullpen was great, too.
Yeah, we're counting on those guys. We got a lot of experience back there with Tommy Steyer and Paul Bergstrom, and then Dan Hammond's coming along a little bit. Mark Lidd, who's one of our primary bullpen guys, didn't even get in the game this weekend because the other guys did so well. So we're going to have to get a few more guys involved next weekend, but it's nice to get those starters deep into games.
Well, last week, you and I had a discussion about Anthony Watts, a freshman out of Clive, Iowa, and you said, Tim, this guy's got a lot of potential, and he doesn't lack for confidence, but, you know, he's moving up from high school right into Division I baseball. Got in the game on Saturday, pitched 3 2/3, gave him a couple runs, but how did you think he did overall?
You know, he gave us a chance. We brought him in the first inning with guys on base, and he struck his first batter out, which is always nice to see for a freshman to do. And then he started the second inning, struck his next batter out. So that's always good too. And he wore down a little bit later in his outing, and they got to him a little bit. But all in all, I was very, very pleased. He threw a lot of strikes. He looked composed. It was not always the case with young players. They look a little jittery their first couple times out. But he's got real good stuff. And I think his role is going to change a little bit as we move forward to next weekend.
You think so? He's going to be in the starting rotation?
We haven't decided completely yet, but we're leaning heavily towards doing that, yes.
Yeah, wow. Well, and then it's always good when you've got a catcher not only runs the show behind the plate, but a guy who has six RBIs in one game. A great weekend for Tony.
Well, you know what? We needed to really shore up that catching situation. Hogan Hlesko caught, you know, probably 85% of the games last year. That's tough to do. Those catchers get foul. They get a lot of nicks with foul tips. And he kind of ran out of gas a little bit at certain times last year. So we really set out to get an older catcher in the program. And Tyler comes to us from USC. And we wanted to get an offensive catcher, somebody who could DH when he wasn't catching. And Tyler's been able to do that. And then he has a big game on Saturday with six RBIs. So we feel really good about our catching situation compared to last year. We got two frontline guys, and a lot of teams can't say that.
I'm sorry. I think I said Tony. I meant Tyler. That's all right. I guess I either had Tony Roth or Tony Daniel on my mind. I don't know which one.
Well, Tony Daniel, being a catcher, yeah.
Yeah. Power-wise, you hit north of 30 home runs the last couple of years as a team. How does this team stack up power-wise, do you think? It's obviously early, but how do you think you're going to stack up?
Well, you know, it's probably going to be a little different that way. I don't think we're going to quite have the same kind of pop we had maybe the last 3 or 4 years. That's why we're trying to generate a little bit different type of an offense this year, maybe a little bit more of an action team, a little bit more contact, a little bit. I think we're athletic enough to be really creative on the base paths. We hit one home run over the weekend. That was Nolan on Sunday. I think Tyler is going to hit some home runs. I think Jack Grace is going to hit some home runs. I don't think we're going to get, 40, 45 home runs out of this club, but I still think we got a good chance to have a deep lineup and find, I like an action game myself, to be honest with you, Tim. And I think this team is going to, once we kind of figure that part out, I think we're going to be pretty interesting that way.
So overall, though, I mean, you just had to be thrilled with your pitching staff because, those early season games, you just don't know.
No, you're right. And we're really big into free bases. And free bases, it's like in basketball, it's like fouls, it's like turnovers. So in baseball, it's the free base. And free bases, walks and errors and hit by pitches and balks and wild pitches and pass balls. And our goal every game is five or less. And we really believe if we can hold the opponent to five or less, that our chances of winning go through the roof, like over 80%. And the first game on Friday, we held them to three and we lost. Kind of unusual, but it's baseball. Second day, we held them to 10 and we won. Didn't make any sense, right? Third day, we held them to three. So we had 16 free bases in three games at this time of year. I'm not sure we've done that before. So I couldn't be more pleased. We're healthy too. You never know about that first weekend sometimes because the guys, they come out with a little different adrenaline rush. And sometimes you worry about, somebody breaking down. So we're healthy. We came out of the weekend great. A lot of guys got experience. My goal next weekend is to get a couple more guys involved in the game.
You just mentioned the 80% and so forth. It got me thinking, there's been times where you've showed me, the different charts you have before the games and so forth. Over the last, say, 3 and 4 years, how much advancement has there been in analytics for you at the college level?
Oh, tremendous. And we have a team here at Creighton who does a lot of that for us. A bunch of students who are great. They come out to practice and they chart the pitchers and give us information. The pitchers are really into that too. They want to know spin rate. They want to know velocity and that kind of stuff. And it helps us a lot when we break the opponent down. I still do a lot of stuff I've done for the last 20 years, but we try to blend that in with some of the new wave analytical stuff. And I thought we were really, really prepared well this weekend for what McNeese State likes to do. They're very much a running team. They're very much speed. They play on turf. They use their turf to their advantage. We only gave up two stolen bases, and we did not give up a bunt. And so I really thought we had a very good plan going in. A lot of it has to do with some of this new information that we're getting through Synergy. There's a lot more video now available in college baseball. It's not always been the case. 4 or 5 years ago, you never got any video on college baseball. And so your scouting was based on maybe talking to another coach who played that team. And we don't do that anymore. We trust our own eyes, and I think we do a little bit better than average job of preparing our guys for our opponents.
Do you think you're middle of the pack, ahead of almost all teams in the Big East as far as those analytics and using them?
I think Connecticut is probably right there too. They have the resources. They really use it a lot. I think Xavier does a very good job in that area. My guess is some of the other programs are still probably trying to figure that part out a little bit. But I know Connecticut and Xavier are big into that. And you know, everybody's going to do it. It's just a matter of getting up to speed a little bit.
Right, right. We're talking with head baseball coach Ed Service. So as great as 2-1 start is on the road, we're going to go up in a level of competition here, going to Coastal Carolina.
Yes, yes. And everybody realizes Coastal won the championship in 2016, and they have been good well before that, and they're continually good since then. And they create a lot of pressure that we saw this weekend. So I'm kind of glad we got McNeese State behind us, because Coastal is very much an action team. They are going to try to run a lot. They've already got 9 stolen bases for the year. And we played Coastal back in 2008, and we had a pretty good team. And I was very, very impressed with how they go about their business. They really, they play the full game. They bunt a lot. They hit and run a lot. They go first to third on the base paths. They try to steal second. They try to steal third. They try to really use their athleticism. This will be one of the most athletic teams, if not the most athletic team, that we'll face all year. So we got a taste of it last weekend with McNeese. Now it's going to be accelerated a little bit more when we play Coastal.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Coach, I hope you have better travel this week.
Yeah, we need to. I give our players a lot of credit. I didn't hear one thing. I mean, if we travel like that we did last weekend, and we're fortunate it was the first weekend, because the players would have done anything to play. But if we have that kind of issues down the road, I think there'll probably be a little bit of grumbling going on. And rightly so. It was a long, long day. I've taken a lot of trips, and I've never experienced one like that. So the players deserve a lot of credit for overcoming that and playing well over the weekend.
Well, you're going out to Coastal, so hopefully maybe only one layer this weekend, maybe none at all.
Well, I hear the weather's supposed to be in the 70s. I did not wear my jacket yesterday, but I still had sleeves on. So it's got to get probably mid to upper 70s to 80s before the sleeves come off. So we'll see once.
All right, Coach. Thanks so much, Coach. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. That's head baseball coach Ed Service here on Blue Jay Banner. Yeah, great start. But what a nightmare travel. Jeez.
Kind of miserable.
I know. I've been taking trips sometimes, in the spring, and I'll be at the airport at like 5:30, and there's the whole Creighton baseball team, you know, getting on a flight, and then they're going to connect to this flight, and then they're going to take a bus over there, you know, and they're not going to get there till mid-afternoon. It's like, oh,
work. The hoops, people don't realize the hoops team is pretty privileged. They don't have to
deal with that stuff. Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. So we want to thank Coach Service for that update. Very promising. Very promising of that pitching staff. That's good news. And pitching travels. Okay, so I thought we did go. We were going to do – then Ed came on, so we got a great update from Ed. So I thought we'd dig into this Marquette game, Ross. Deep into this Marquette game.
Okay, let's dig.
What's your initial thoughts, first of all?
Well, my initial thoughts are I'm pumped for the game. You know, I think everybody's pumped. It sounds like I've talked to a bunch of people that are really excited for tomorrow night, and I think it's going to be an unbelievable atmosphere in there. So we've had some great, great games with Marquette in years past, and Probably none with the implications, quite honestly, since we've joined the Big East, with the implications that this game has. So I think it changes things a little bit. But yeah, I'm just my initial thoughts are just how excited I am for the opportunity for this team to go take the Big East potentially.
So I thought we'd start with like their team stats. Just take a look at some of them. You know, they're amazingly, they're averaging 80 points a game, which is crazy to think about. They're holding their opponents to 70, but they're averaging 80 points a game. That's
And it all kind of stems. I mean, obviously they've got a lot of really good pieces, but it all comes from Tyler Kolek. You know, he runs the show, and he's as savvy of a point guard that I feel like we've seen in this league in a long, long time. I'm trying to even think of somebody that, since we've been in the Big East, has probably had his acumen just passing the basketball. And I don't know that anybody jumps out to me, to be quite honest with you. I mean, obviously, you know, Maurice Watson on our end was a tremendous distributor for the brief time that we had Maurice, but gosh, he runs the show, and he's just got an unbelievable change of pace and direction, and he's just a competitive kid, and he's just kind of he's just the machine there. So if you take him away, or you know, whatever, you know, if he were to be hurt for any stretch of time for them, that would be a huge, huge blow to that Marquette team. I think the world of that kid as a player.
So what do you think we will do to combat him?
Well, you know what's interesting is UConn played kind of an interesting style against them. UConn really sort of let him have a lot of these kind of straight line drives to the rim, and they really fanned out on a lot of their shooters, and they really didn't bring a ton of help. So if Kolek was kind of getting into the paint, and you know, he kind of wants to do that you know, that Steve Nash patented, you know, get kind of but you know, beneath the rim on the baseline, kind of prod a little bit and see what he's got option, you know, what options he's got available to him, and he doesn't get real sped up. So they wanted to make him, you know, essentially try and just go finish by himself at the rim, because he didn't have options to go pass it to shooters out on the wing, or dump off passes or anything like that. And I thought that was a really interesting strategy. And you could tell that, you know, watching a good bit of that game, that Kolek was feeling a little bit uncomfortable, that he didn't really have any outlets once he started to drive towards the rim. So it's going to be interesting to see if we just say, hey, employ a similar strategy. You know, because I don't know that you can really double a whole lot of their guys. I don't know that, you know, we don't double ball screens anyways, but you know, Osu Iguodaro is a great passer as well. It's not like you can really come with a dig on him. You know, if Kolek was out and Fred King was guarding him or something, I don't know that that would work terribly well with their team. So I don't know. I do think that they're vulnerable defensively for sure. It's going to be an interesting chess match. Both teams want to get up and down the floor. Both teams play at a high tempo.
Yeah. Now they're shooting 49.5% from the field, but they're allowing their opponents to shoot 45%. So when you consider they played a majority of their games at home, that's a big number. So from a Creighton, you know, standpoint, you look at that, you go, okay, we should be able to score with them. You know, how well are we going to be able to do on the defensive end with some of their pieces? And we talked a lot about Kolek, but obviously Cam Jones is leading scorer. And again, we talked about him the last time we were together after the St. John's game. You know, he's a guy who'll throw up two shots. One won't hit the rim. The other one will brick off the backboard, and you'll be like, wow. And then he'll drain four incredibly tough three pointers in a row. He's just one of those kind of guys. But I really think Prosper's the guy really we got to be concerned with.
Yeah, Prosper. I mean, he's turned into a really nice player. I think he and Iguodaro have both been really, really good for them. Obviously, you know, Cam Jones has been kind of their main scorer on the outside, but those two guys inside, have been really good. And then the Joplin kid that they bring off the bench, I think he's been a
Yeah.
really nice player.
He can really hit threes, man.
Yeah, and he's got kind of a big, strong NBA type body. So, what's interesting is, and I think works in our favor, especially at home, is, we do a really good job, obviously, of not fouling. And this is a Marquette team that's one of the last in the country at getting to the free throw line. So it's I think that certainly works in our favor if we can not let them get really any points at the free throw line. I'm confident enough in the rest of our team's abilities to walk away with a win tomorrow.
Surprising stat to me was they're even themselves and their opponents are even 35% apiece from three, which kind of surprised me. I thought they'd have a significant advantage, but they don't. 35 is not a poor number, but it's not a number that just pops out at you either.
Yeah, I think they're a little bit like us from the 3-point line. They've been a little bit streaky this year. I mean, there's some games. I mean, if you go on Bart Torvik and kind of sort through all their games, I mean, you there's a few games there where they've really shot the lights out, and then they'll have a couple of games there where they've really shot the ball poorly from three. And a lot of teams, they're like us in the sense that they're going to take a lot of threes. I look at box scores on all these different games all the time, and I can't even believe, Tim. I looked at somebody the other day. I can't remember. It might have been Indiana. I can't remember who they played. They took six threes the whole game, and that is not Marquette. They're going to take 20 plus threes probably with ease, and it's they're liable to go cold. That's for sure. I don't like the fact that they were just 5 of 22 from three. That would tell me a positive. A positive average is coming back into play there, but I hope not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, they haven't played their best on the road.
No.
Even against some of the, teams lower on the rank, they've struggled a little bit with some of those teams. They won the games, but they struggled a little bit. But they, the one of the reasons probably too is considering they've got two athletic guys in Prosper and Iguodaro. They're losing the rebounding battle by over three a game to their opponents. Now, some of that can be, shooting the ball as well as they do at 49%. Of course, there's not a lot of rebounds coming off, but that's something, obviously the Jays have been done a really good job at taking care of the glass. So that's going to be key, not only on the offensive or defensive end, but also on the offensive end. Guys like Mason Miller, who's been really good at getting offensive rebounds, and Kaluma as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, Art and Mason have been fantastic offensive rebounders really all year. So if they can go in and steal some rebounds and get us some awesome second chance points from that capacity, that would be a huge boost.
But here's something that's got to scare everybody who plays Marquette. They have turned it over 295 times this year. Their opponents have turned it over 439 times.
Yeah.
And they're a team that Shaka has, what does he
18th in
have?
the.
He wants how many deflections?
Oh, yeah. They chart all of that stuff and
Yeah,
they
he
play
wants
that.
X amount of deflections a game and things like that. So
Yeah,
he's
they play
very
that kind of
big on.
1-2-2 press, kind of 3-quarter court press, and they've got. Iguodaro and Prosper and those guys are, Joplin off the bench. They're long, big guys, and they put them at the top. They're gonna make you throw over the top of their of that press before you get, set in your half court offense. It's difficult to play against. They're what looks like on KenPom, they're 18th in the country in turnover percentage defensively. So they're turning their opponents over at a pretty darn good clip.
Yeah. And of course, that's something that's we just talked about the last game of the first half. We had some turnover issues. The one thing I know, maybe guys who watch a ton of basketball know this, but maybe fans who aren't, don't watch as many games as we do. But the key about that press is, you've got to make them pay. You've got to make them pay if they're going to press you. Otherwise, if you break the press every time and then just pull it back, it was something Dana Altman always said. If you break the press every time, because Danny used to put that 3-quarter press on all the time. And he said, if a team just going to pull it out and dribble it once they get across the half court, I'm not backing off that press all night long because it's not hurting me. And so you've got to somehow make them pay on that press. You know, you're not going to do it every time, but you need to make an attempt to get an easy basket, to get a two-on-one or what have you, or a guy wide open on the wing for a three, and you knock some of those down. That gets, you know, Shaka thinking a little bit. Maybe we need to get back on defense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a, it's a fine, I agree, but it's a fine line because, you know, sometimes they want you to get sped up and start throwing the ball all over the place because you want easy buckets. I think our guys are too talented to get caught up in that sort of game. But you know, you point to some of the silly turnovers you have against a team like St. John's that speeds you up. And, you know, this team is certainly, you know, not immune to that by any stretch. So.
Yeah, I think going along with that, too, is once you kind of break that pressure, make sure you get great ball movement, you know, and one guy doesn't try and do it all himself because you're going to have them a little bit out of position for a while. If you can keep them flying around, you know, your chances of getting an open look increase a lot.
Absolutely.
The other thing, of course, we've talked a lot about our bench. They go nine deep. I mean, God, Ben Goldkid he's a nice player, too.
Yeah, he doesn't get a ton of minutes, but gosh, you can see some serious potential with that kid.
Yeah, he's played in every game this year, though, amazingly. But he's averaging about, you know, 8 minutes a game. But he to me, he looked like a kid that, you know, we would like to recruit as a four. You know what I mean? Like, he's a guy can hit that three.
Absolutely.
Lanky kid, you know, that can get some rebounds for you. Yeah. He's a guy that's I've been very impressed with coming off the bench of all these bench guys. Stevie Mitchell's a guy, you know, like you mentioned Joplin. Stevie Mitchell starts, but Joplin, you know, gets almost as many minutes as he does.
Yeah. Stevie Mitchell, he doesn't really jump off the page to you no. a whole lot. You know, but he's been there a couple of years now and has been under Shaka's system. I mean, I've been impressed with Shaka's tenure so far. What's interesting to think about though is how good that team was with Marcus Howard's last year there, the year that we went in there and beat them when they were top 10. They had a team very, very similar to this year's team as far as record and all those sorts of things. And, you know, then obviously the tournament doesn't happen. And then, you know, they have the year they have after that and Wojo's gone. So, yeah. You know, it's interesting how things play out. I wonder if they could have made a little run there in the tournament had none of that happened. If Wojo would still be around, I'd like to think he might still be around.
Yeah. So just to let everybody know, so Creighton, Providence, Xavier, all one game back of Marquette. So if Creighton wins. Creighton, all four teams would be tied at the top. Providence and Xavier have a game coming up in a week that they will play against each other. So somebody's going to lose there. And then also, I believe, is it tomorrow? Who goes to UConn tomorrow? Providence goes to UConn tomorrow.
Yep. Right?
Yeah. So, you know, you would think UConn would be favored in that game. I'm sure they will be. And if that holds, that's a loss for Providence, and Providence turns around, flips, takes out Xavier, then that would leave Creighton and Marquette tied. And in that tie-breaking scenario, Creighton right now would get the tiebreaker because they are even all the way down through all the tiebreakers. They get to the very last one, which is who has the best net ranking. And for a while, Creighton had a nice little cushion there. Now they're one position apart, Creighton 13, Marquette 14.
Wow.
So you would think Creighton wins, probably boost them to 12. Marquette's probably not going to drop any. Marquette does have a very weak schedule on out, so they're not probably going to pick up a lot of brownie points with the net, where Creighton at least has a Villanova team that's a quad two game, might even shift over to a quad one game. You know, they've got a road game against DePaul, which will be probably a quad two, maybe at least a quad three. So kind of slightly favors Creighton, not much, but more than likely after this game, I don't see Marquette losing a game.
After our game?
Yeah. Not with Butler. They've got Butler, Georgetown, and St. John's, I believe.
Yeah,
I mean, and you're playing the three or DePaul. You're playing the three of the four worst teams in the league, and you're probably
it's possible. I mean, it's not like those teams. You know, obviously St. John's has won a couple of big games that they probably shouldn't have won. You know, Butler beats Xavier at home. You know, they did just lose yesterday to Georgetown at home, but. So it's not like it's impossible by any stretch, but yeah, I tend to agree with you. I don't see them losing any of those.
Yeah, I just think Marquette has a real advantage going down the stretch. DePaul, then add Butler, then St. John's. And like you said, I'd have more faith in Butler if they continued their little run they were on here lately. But
I'd be curious what Butler's record is this year without Manny Bates. It seems like they really struggled without him.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. No doubt. No doubt. They just struggled yesterday with Georgetown, man. That was.
I wonder if there's I can go to Manny Bates' profile on. I didn't get to see that game. I actually went down to the. I had tickets from somebody, from my uncle, actually. I went down to the Nebraska Maryland game because I didn't have anything going on.
Huskers are on fire at home right now.
What a great game that was, Tim. And you know what was tough was the under was 135.5, and it lands on 136 in overtime.
Did you have the under, Ross?
Yep.
I was on the other side of that, Ross. I was very, 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 very jumping up and down happy when it went to overtime.
I mean, God, you, man. That was demoralizing because that was the right call. The under on that game was absolutely the right call, and to get screwed like that by half a point in overtime. But hey, that's how it goes.
It was. Yeah, once the game started, and then I was like, oh man, I'd forgotten about the struggles Maryland had on the offensive end on the road. You know, I was like, whoa.
Yeah, they do struggle a little bit in that regard. I tell you who I was really impressed with, their center, Julian Reese, is a nice player. He's a really strong, athletic kid, but I was really impressed with Nebraska. I was really impressed, Tim, with Hoiberg's kid.
Yeah, he played well.
But
you know, they got to be kicking themselves. They had Purdue beat.
They did have Purdue beat.
And if they would have won that game, they'd be sitting at 15-13 right now with another Q1 win. Well, you know, they wouldn't be in the field, but they would be knocking on the door.
Their injuries really hurt them. I mean, that team that was healthy that played against us, like knowing what we know now, that team was actually pretty darn good. Like, it stands out as a loss at home to a 14-14 team, but that team healthy was pretty good. We shouldn't have lost to them at home, but
they lost to 20 to St. John's. No, I mean, I'm sorry.
I think that's the game. I can't remember if Griesel played that game or not, but yeah, that was a bad loss for them. So I looked it up. Manny Bates has not played in four conference games. They are 1-3 in those games. Well, and he I think he got hurt.
Xavier was the game they won, right?
He played that game though.
Oh, did he? Okay.
And then the game he got hurt at St. John's and only played 15 minutes, they lost that game. So if you count that, they're 1-4 with his injuries.
Yeah.
So.
And on the Nebraska subject, Sam Griesel did play the St. John's game. He played very poorly, but they had no Derek Walker.
That's right. Walker was out for a while too. Yeah. Yeah, that would really hurt them with that. They could win without Griesel. I don't know if they could win without Walker, because they've got really no depth down low that they can really go to.
No, not at all. They got that freshman kid off the bench, but he's really raw.
Yeah. But enough about Nebraska. So, yeah, this is really going to be exciting coming down the stretch here. And now UConn has kind of finally gotten past Seton Hall. So it appears that the five teams we thought would be in the top five at the beginning of the year are finally there. I was looking at something, Ross. We said who you got. We did this about before the season and even Big East season started. And it was kind of interesting. We said, who you got for more wins, DePaul or St. John's? And I think we kind of both went with DePaul. But now
– more Big gosh, East wins?
Know. Yeah. I don't know right now. I mean, it does appear everything you read out of New York that there's real turmoil going on in that program right now with Carabello. Yep. I guess Carabello walked into the media room before the game against Creighton, and everybody's like, whoa, well, you know, are you not playing tonight? No, well, why not? He goes, I don't know. And that was his comment. And then
he's wearing sunglasses on the bench.
Yeah, and then the other kid that he went to prep or high school with, Pinson, very talented kid, he's suspended indefinitely. So, you know, it does sound like some things are really falling apart there that, you know, I'm not sure that they can get together. I mean, they had their chances against Creighton. They really did.
Absolutely.
And they just couldn't take advantage, you know. So, yeah, that, and I think we had the question of who would be the better record, UConn or Villanova? Which that was an easy one because we both went Villanova. But all right. Look at this guy. We have head women's coach Jim Flannery joining us. Hi, coach.
Hi, Tim. Ross, good to see you. It's been a long time.
Seems like it.
Coach Flann.
Almost a day, Ross. Ross was getting buckets on me yesterday, Tim.
Was he?
Yeah, the couple times I got switched on to Ross, his eyes got really big.
Just fouling.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not even quick enough to do that. You got to have a certain measure of quickness to get close enough to foul somebody.
Hey, Flann, you're still playing and still organizing and still talking like a madman out there and screaming for everybody. It's you could tell who the coach is out there. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'm still a good screener. I know what I can do. Screen and get out of the way.
I'm impressed somebody's setting a screen at all, actually.
Well, that's what happens when you get to this point and you can't do anything else. You got to find
really,
your
value. Yeah, you can't get
over. You
got to
find
your
value somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, Coach, thanks for joining us. It's not often after beating a team by 41 points that we want to talk about the game before.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what a great game. What a great effort. I know. How defeated was the team after the game to come that close?
I saw Max Homa get interviewed yesterday after Rom took him down at the end. And he, you know, I think the question was, are you more disappointed or proud of your effort? And it kind of falls in between, right? And in the immediate aftermath, you're more disappointed, right? Because that's all you can think about is the 15 things that we could have done in the fourth quarter that would have given us one extra stop or one extra basket. And then, you know, once you get past that, then you're proud of the effort and you understand that it was one or two plays, and that you know, we had UConn down by 11 in their building in the fourth quarter, and it's the first time we've played them wire to wire. So, but it was in the immediate in the locker room immediately afterwards. It's pretty gut wrenching because you just, like I said, even as a coach, I'm walking through the why did I do this and why didn't I do this, and I'm sure the players are kind of doing the same thing, but. You know, the fact is UConn made some winning. They made a lot of winning plays too, to get to that point. And we just couldn't quite close the deal. But I think it, I told him, I said, it shows you where you are. And I said, that's, you'll have another chance at a team at that team or a team like them in the conference tournament. And hopefully in the NCAA tournament, you're going to play a team like that. And now, you know, you can win because you were right there.
Right. We'll get back to you in a second, but is there any, like, there's not even close. That's what separates pro golf from any other sport. You will interview, like, just like Homa, you will interview 100 guys after a tournament, whether they missed a cut or whatever. They will all say, Oh, no. Took away a lot of positives. Took away a lot of – I'm just amazed, always amazed by that, because when I play a match with somebody and I lose, I'm thinking about it for 3 days. I'm upset. I don't take away anything positive. And these guys are always like, oh, no, there's something positive, you know. Yeah. It's amazing, their attitude. Unreal. Yeah.
Well, you have to flip it because we didn't get back from Connecticut till like 3 a.m. You know, I didn't pull into my driveway till 3:30 that morning, and we play Saturday at 1:00. So you don't have a lot of time to feel sorry for yourself. The players don't have time to feel sorry for themselves because, you know, basically we had one day to prep for Georgetown, and I know it ended up seeming like we wouldn't have needed it today because of the score, but you know, that's a team that we only beat by 8 at their place. So it wasn't like we felt like we didn't need to prepare for them or didn't need to bring our A game. So that's the great thing about athletics is you get to turn the page. Usually you get an opportunity to turn the page quickly and you don't have time to wallow in your self-pity.
Yeah. One more point about the UConn game. I mean, you got rebounded by 8. You had 8 more turnovers, and so it's pretty amazing. Both teams ended up with the exact same number of shots made and the exact same number of shots attempted. The difference, of course, was you made more threes, and they made, they made 8 more free throws as well. It's probably the difference in the game, especially at the end.
Yeah, it's a weird game, Tim, because the first game we shot really poorly, and that contributed to the rebounding differential, but we got out rebounded 59-27. So we went from minus 32 to plus 8. but the turnovers were the opposite. You know, we had in the first game, we had 10 fewer turnovers. We only had 5 turnovers and they had 15, and we had 15 and they had 7. So it's, you know, as much as you can say, oh, these are the keys to the game, you still have to kind of be good in every area or good enough. And, you know, real proud of what we did on the glass and we hung in there and to out rebound that team with the length that they have and physicality, I think is a really good sign. Cause you tell your team that's transferable. Like that's, you can package up rebounding and take it from game to game to game. It's like, you know, it's like defense. And I've thought we've done a really good job the last 3 weeks of buying in to be in a better rebounding team. I told him about three to four weeks ago, I said, you know, last year, we were plus 3 on the glass, and typically our teams are anywhere from -1 to +1 because we're usually built smaller, we're more skilled, we shoot the 3, and we win on fewer turnovers and more 3s. And last year's team, I think, became just a little bit better than a lot of the teams we've had because they were just a little bit better rebounding team, and I challenged them to be that, and I think we've done that over the last few weeks, and I, like I said, I think that's going to transfer, and you can carry that with you.
Flan, I'm curious, you know, throughout this time of year, typically every year, I mean, and most coaches kind of give the answer of they don't pay attention much to that, but it's hard for, and especially your girls too, to not, you know, look at social media and see different bracketologies and all those sorts of things. Is that something you guys talk about at all, or is it just really the next game is the task at hand, and that's you that?
Know, yeah. Well, we don't talk. I don't really talk about it a lot to them. I mean, I pay attention to it, and I think some of them don't pay attention to it, but I think most of our team does, so that there's enough information being passed around the locker room that they kind of know where we're sitting. And I think they feel pretty good about where we are. And, you know, there's a lot that can change the last, you know, these next couple regular season games and in the conference tournament. You know, I think if you look, that the committee usually puts a little bit of a disproportionate emphasis on conference tournament results. You can slide up, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 seeds sometimes by winning or being first out in your conference tournament. So, but we're sitting pretty good, but, you know, I think you also, the other part is you want to be playing your best basketball. And I feel like we're a better team now than we were in January. And that's encouraging to me. And I think we're pretty consistent. I mean, you know, you're never going to be consistent enough for most coaches, but I think our consistency, our worst game is better than our worst game used to be.
We're talking with head coach Jim Flannery. So Wednesday, huge game, pivotal game in the standings. You go to Milwaukee, take on Marquette.
Yeah. Yeah. Marquette's a good team. They're, and we beat them handily at our place, but they were missing, you know, their third best scorer. And I don't know, we caught them at a good time. We had just lost it to at home to Providence, and we were really ready to go, and it kind of got away from them. It'll be a much tougher game up there. They're, you know, they're a team that's projected to be in the tournament. They beat UConn at home at their place a couple weeks ago. So that's UConn's only conference loss. So we know they're a team that really guards and rebounds. They're kind of like the UConn man. I think they ugly it up. It's going to be in the 50s. they don't play fast, but they know who they are on offense, but they're not explosive. But then they're just physical, and they take a lot of pride in their defense. And so it'll be, you know, I just told our team it'll be great, because it's a conference tournament semifinal type game and an NCAA tournament type team that you're going to be playing. And so it's great for that. It's great for Wednesday, but it's also great prep for, you know, our conference tournament in a week and a half, and hopefully the NCAA tournament in 2 to 3 weeks.
I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but how do you work out the tiebreaker if you should lose and you would be the same? How would you win that tiebreaker over Marquette? Because it's kind of important to be in that 2-3 slot versus the 4.
We would lose it, assuming they went out and we went out. We would lose the tiebreaker because they have the win over Connecticut. So okay. I think if they have two more games after this, and we only have one, so they've got a little bit more of a task ahead of them. But yeah, you're right. I mean, to have to play UConn potentially in the semis versus Villanova is, but you know, Villanova is a really good basketball team too. I mean, they're not, you know, UConn ended up winning at Villanova the other day, but it was a 1-point game with 2 minutes to go. And when Villanova and UConn played at UConn, it was a 5-point game. So those two teams are probably a little closer than most people would think. They're closer than they are in most years, I think. So now the other issue is you're in UConn's backyard, because we're playing our conference tournament at the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. So of the 9,000 fans that'll be there, about 8,500 of them will be UConn fans, assuming they're they're still alive. So it is more like a true road game from a fan standpoint.
Gino's got to be thinking, man, this conference is getting a lot tougher lately.
Yeah, I think I really think this is the best our league has been since we've been in it. And part of that obviously has to do with UConn being in it now, because now you've got that team that's, you know, one of the best in the country. But also just that we have a lot of experienced teams. And I know it's getting this way on the men's side too. It's hard for freshmen and sophomores to play with the transfer portal and the COVID year. When you add those two things together, there are a lot of really old teams in our league. I look at St. John's, who's probably going to finish fifth, and of their 8 players in their rotation, they have 7 of them are fifth and sixth year kids, and one of them's a fourth year. So, you know, we met with our freshmen a couple weeks ago, and it was a day or two before we played St. John's. And I just told them how great they're doing. I said, you guys are playing, you know, they're both playing, our freshman guards are playing 8 to 10 minutes a game. I said, you guys played high school basketball last year, and tomorrow against St. John's, you're going to be playing against everybody in their rotation is like 22, 23, 20. And I said, so you're doing great, but that's kind of the nature of, until we get the COVID people out, and until maybe the transfer portal settles down, I think you're going to be seeing a lot of teams that are playing 21 to 23 year olds. And for whatever reason, this year in our league, I think it's a really old league. I think it will be a little younger next year.
Well, Flynn, go ahead, Russ.
Well, I was just going to ask how recruiting has changed on the women's side with the transfer portal. I can't imagine there's as many names as in the guys, but I truly don't know much of the staff surrounding that.
It's not as drastic as you'd think. It's less, but I think there were 1,700 men maybe and about 1,300 women last year in the portal. So it's not, it's, you're talking 3.5 to almost 4 players per team that are leaving, wow, which is just unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, and I think it's fine for somebody who's not getting to play, who wants an opportunity and they're going to transfer down, or, and there are, or if you're in a really dysfunctional situation, the striking thing to me is how many good players are leaving seemingly good programs, you know, right, who kids that are playing 25 to 30 minutes a game and are in teams that go to the NCAA tournament and they think something's better. That's to me the more
crazy. Thing. Yeah.
Plan. Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Safe travels to Milwaukee, and let's get that win up there.
Okay.
You don't have to worry about that tiebreaker.
That's right. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Ross.
All right, you bet.
Thanks, Plan. We'll see you. Good luck. Guys.
Thanks.
All right. So tomorrow night we will be back here on Instant Reaction post game show, about roughly about an hour after the game. So we'd love to hear your thoughts. So join us right here then. I want to thank Ed Service and Jim Flannery for joining us. And we will see you tomorrow night. Let's pack the CHI. I don't think it's a sellout. I haven't heard of the sellout email come out yet. I'm shocked by that.
It'll be close.
Yeah, they were still advertising $10 Upper Bowl tickets today on Twitter. So not quite sold out.
That amazes me. Like,
I think because it's a weeknight. If that was, it was on a Saturday.
Yeah, I know. Every other game is, you're right. Every other game's been a Saturday, but. Still, it's a big game. All right, guys. Thanks. We will. And by the way, I'm sorry. One last thing. Gee, how could I forget? So, yeah, we'll be tomorrow night. Instant Reaction. And then a special recorded version, which we will put up on right here on the YouTube channel, that we're going to record live from the Copacabana, the site of the Bourbon and Blue Jays event put on by the West Chamber of Commerce. It kicks off at 4 o'clock on Wednesday. So head on over to Copacabana. It is on 175th and Wright. It's just on the south, right across the south side of Center Avenue, across from the big Target, 180th and Center, right in that mall right there. So stop in. It's a great place, beautiful place. They're going to have some of the finest distilleries around, giving you totally different types of bourbon and drinks and so forth. And it's a fundraiser for the West Omaha Chamber of Commerce for all the fine work that they do in West Omaha. So we will be there as well. We're efforting some Creighton people to show up there. So hopefully they will be there too. So come on by, say hello, talk some Jays basketball, talk about the great victory we're going to have tomorrow night, and then enjoy some bourbon. So make sure and put that on your calendar for Wednesday. All right. So we will see you tomorrow night.